He has made him known, a Christmas sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
The true God is not a God that will be found as a result of our God-seeking. He will only be revealed as he looks for and finds us. This is what was happening when Jesus was born.
And for any size year-end donation, we'll send you a CD of this sermon and a sermon preached by Todd on the conversion of Paul. You can make an online tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org.
This is how Nelson Mandela would have wanted to be sent off. These are blessings, and in our African tradition, when it rains, when you are buried, it means that your gods are welcoming you.
Each Christmas, we celebrate the birth of a child who came into the world with only a stable's roof to shelter him, but through a life of humility and the ultimate sacrifice, a life guided by faith and kindness towards others, Christ assumed a mighty voice.
You're going to do what we want you to do, says the evangelical industrial complex, and if you don't, you might find yourself out of a job.
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
If someone wanted to see a crucifix displayed in one of our state houses or in the U.S. House of Representatives or the Chamber of the Senate, we might, well, even a lot of Christians might say, well, golly, that crosses the line. Maybe that does violate the rights of those who do not believe. What are the principles at work? Recently, it's been reported that a Polish court has approved a crucifix in Parliament. That is, they have rejected a complaint by lawmakers that this crucifix hanging in the Parliament there violates the rights of non-believers. How do we sort these issues of Christian or religious symbols in our public places? How do we sort these issues out? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 11th of December. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery joins us here for the first few minutes to talk about a court ruling in favor of displaying a crucifix in Poland's Parliament. A little bit later, Dr. James Buescher will be alongside. We're going to be remembering 4th century martyr Saint Lucia. You often see her dressed in white with a red trim, and she often is carrying a plate with eyes on it, and she is crowned with candles. What does all of that mean, and what do we know of this 4th century martyr and all of the ideas that surround her remembrance? We'll go through that for about the next half hour of Issues Etc. Then we'll be reviewing a sermon preached by Mark Driscoll, much in the news, pastor of Mars Hill. Plagiarism is the latest reason he's in the headlines. We'll just review one of his sermons, part of a sermon series called Malachi, Living for a Legacy, preached this last Sunday at his church, Mars Hill. Finally, we'll round off everything with Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute to talk about the health risks of oral contraception. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MY-IE. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is a regular guest. He's professor emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England. He's a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, and he is author and editor of more than 50 books, including his latest, Christ as Center and Circumference. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
In the American system, just by way of comparison, would a complaint about a crucifix hanging in a state house or in the U.S. House of Representatives or the Chamber of the Senate, would that be considered a valid complaint that it violates the rights of those who don't believe? In the U.S. context, what do you think?
Yes, almost certainly. A few years ago, there was the problem of placing a mammoth religious statue, I believe this was of Moses as lawgiver or something of the sort, before a courthouse, and that had to be removed. The fact of the matter is that if the symbol so associates with a particular religious position, then that's going to create a problem with the First Amendment, because the First Amendment declares that the government must not favor any one particular religious position. And, of course, this is the basis of the removal of prayers from the public schools.
Is the Polish context different? Are there different statements of their constituting documents that would make it a different issue here?
Well, that's the interesting thing. The judge that you mentioned said that, of course, a crucifix is a religious symbol, but it is also a cultural and national sort of thing. It indicates the cultural integrity of the country. But the difficulty with that is that in the 1997 Constitution of Poland, it becomes very clear that no one religion ought to be favored. I read from the preamble of the 1997 Polish Constitution. Both those who believe in God as the source of truth, justice, good, and beauty, as well as those not sharing such faith, but respecting those universal values as arising from other sources, these are equal in their rights and obligations toward the common good. Okay? And then if you go down to Article 25, which is the one dealing with religious positions, it states, churches and other religious organizations shall have equal rights. Public authorities in the Republic of Poland shall be impartial in matters of personal conviction, whether religious or philosophical, or in relation to outlooks on life, and shall ensure their freedom of expression within public life. Now, the implication of this is that no one religion can be favored, and therefore it appears to me that this would pose the same kind of problem in Poland as it would in the United States. The difference, of course, is that Poland has had a homogeneous Roman Catholic history, and therefore it's much more difficult in contexts like this to appreciate the separation of church and state. And there is a very interesting parallel with a case that came down in Italy just a few years ago. This case had to do with crucifixes on the walls of school classrooms. Okay? An atheist didn't like this, and the Supreme Court in Italy agreed that the crucifixes would have to go because the 1948 Constitution in Italy expressly separated church and state, okay? And an Italian constitutional court decision in the year 2000 said that it was essential that the state remain equidistant and impartial in relation to all religious positions. Well, this case went to the European Court of Human Rights, and on the first level, the court said that the crucifixes would have to be removed. Okay? But finally, the case went to the full court in Strasbourg, and the government's argument prevailed. And the government's argument for keeping the crucifixes was that, as a matter of fact, the crucifixes lost any specific Christian force, and this has simply become a symbol of the Italian state and a cultural phenomenon. Now, in my view, this points up the real problem, whether it's in the United States or in Poland or in Italy. The real problem is that if there is a separation of church and state, the only way that you can retain these symbols in a public context where they represent government action is to argue that they're no longer genuinely Christian. And it seems to me that that kind of an argument is a Pyrrhic victory. If you win, you really lose. and you lose because whole point of wanting to have the crucifix or Christian symbols is, of course, evangelistic. It's to promote the gospel. And I think that the people who argue for keeping the religious symbols on a non-religious ground are being hypocritical. I think that they really do want the symbols there for religious reasons, and yet they're willing to use this kind of specious secular argument in order to achieve their ends, and the end doesn't justify the means.
So someone in Poland might argue in favor of keeping that crucifix that, as a matter of recent history, Roman Catholicism was key in opposing and perhaps even overthrowing communism there. It's a symbol of our history, nothing more. You would say, well, that argument is problematic when it comes to religious symbols.
Well, very definitely. And it's interesting that the judge who supported this admitted that the crucifix is primarily a religious symbol. But then he went on to argue, as you've just presented, that it is of great cultural importance in Polish history. The problem here is, though, that if your constitution does separate church and state, then it seems to me that you can't use the cultural argument to justify what at the same time is favoring one religious position over against another. I think that's the real difficulty in this. Of course, in the United States, for example, this is exactly parallel to the prayer in public school situation. The people who tried to maintain prayer in the public schools said, well, it doesn't have to be specifically Christian, and it can be up to the teacher as to what kind of prayer is presented, or this can be a vague cultural religious exercise. And in saying that, they are, of course, going against the biblical position, which is that everything you do has got to be done in the name of Jesus, and you can't have prayers to the great puff of smoke or something of this kind and pass this off as somehow Christian religion. It isn't. The final answer, in my view, in a modern pluralistic society where there is separation of church and state, the real answer to this is for the churches to engage in far more effective evangelism. One should not expect the state to carry that function. That isn't what the state's supposed to be doing. And in Lutheran theology, of course, the Luther's view of the left hand of God and the right hand of God is directly along this line. You don't expect the state to be doing evangelism for you, or you shouldn't be, at least.
We talked recently with you about crucifixes in Great Britain, and this was in terms of people wearing them on their person, at their workplaces and things like that. And that's a situation where there isn't a separation of church and state. How would the issue be different there, Dr. Montgomery?
Well, you would certainly think it would be different, owing to the fact that there is an established Christian church in England. It's the Reformed branch of the Holy Catholic Church established in this kingdom. It's the Anglican Church. So you would think that there wouldn't be the slightest problem along this line, but there has been such an encroachment of secularism, even in the English context, that in the English courts, this person who wanted to wear a crucifix while serving as an airline stewardess, if I recall correctly, was not allowed to do so. That case went to Strasbourg, and Strasbourg took the same approach that the French law has taken, that only if a religious symbol is overwhelmingly ostentatious, if it's the kind of thing that would cause real difficulty, should it be prohibited in that kind of context. And in France, there's a separation of church and state. But in France, the rule is that no ostentatious religious symbols are to be worn in a public context. That is, where in a public, in a state context, I should say, where the wearing of this would suggest that the government was in favor of it. But that certainly doesn't apply to wearing a cross pin or a crucifix pin, or a Star of David if one is Jewish. In England, the fact that this could even go beyond the English courts to the European court in Strasbourg shows the degree to which the secularists are gaining strength throughout the Western world. 10 years ago, we didn't have active atheism, atheistic organizations trying to push their agendas the way we do today. So this is a problem everywhere, and it's a problem not just where there's separation of church and state, but where there are established churches. The answer to this, as I say, is very definitely to have the churches more aggressively evangelistic, for them to be impacting the secular society and not expecting someone else to do their job for them.
Let's see what John in St. Ann, Missouri has to say. He's on the line. Thanks for waiting, John.
Hi there. I just want to say, in talking about this issue with respect to the United States, I think it's extremely important to use the words of the First Amendment that Congress may make no law establishing religion. When we use separation of church and state, which is not found in the Constitution, which was an invention of Hugo Black, who was a member of the Klan and was very anti-Catholic, but I think we got to stick with the Constitution, with the words of the Constitution, and, of course, then you have to interpret what constitutes establishment of religion. But the founders never intended anything what we consider of separation of church and state.
John, thank you very much. What's your reaction there, Dr. Montgomery?
Well, you'd better be a little more careful there. It was Thomas Jefferson who used the expression the wall of separation. And Jefferson, of course, was not a Christian. He was the most influential person in the establishing the Virginia Bill of Rights, which had a direct influence on the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment. It seems to me that when we talk about separation of church and state, we are simply using that as a synonym for the non-establishment of a religion. And it certainly is the establishing of a religion if the symbols of one religious position are presented as if the government were supporting that religion and others are not. So it seems to me that this wouldn't really change the situation any if we used the Establishment Clause language rather than the language of separation. The point is that we ought not, as Christians, to expect our government to do our evangelistic work for us, and we should spend our energies trying to achieve more effective evangelism, more of an impact on the secular society through the church, than thinking that somehow the state is going to do this job for us.
Dr. Montgomery, before we let you go, tell us quickly about next summer's International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights.
Well, it's going to be quite a session because we have Craig Parton, Esquire, we have Angus Menuge, and these gentlemen are marvelous in the classroom and are going to be able to provide a particularly strong defense of the faith and particularly strong insights into how to defend the faith in our secular society. The registrations for the summer program are now half full. We can take 20 participants each summer, and half of these places are now gone, and it's only December. So we'd really advise the listeners to Issues, Etc., if they would like to take part in the summer program, to apply right away. And there is generous scholarship aid for this summer, but again, the scholarship aid is only available to those who have registered, and there are only 10 places left. So we trust that listeners will ask Santa Claus to bring them a registration for the International Academy of apologetics, evangelism, and human rights in Strasbourg, France, in the French Rhineland, a wonderful cultural experience along with great training in the defense of the faith.
Folks, you can find out more about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is Professor Emeritus at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's Director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including Christ as Center and Circumference. Dr. Montgomery, thank you very much for your time.
You're always welcome.
When we come back on this Wednesday afternoon, 2 days from now, on the 13th of December, the church is going to be remembering a 4th century martyr, Lucia. Her story is rather sparse. We don't know much about her, but she comes down to us by way of symbolism, dressed in white with a red sash, with her head crowned with candles. Sometimes she carries a little plate with a pair of eyes on it. What does all that mean, and what can we learn of the early Christians by remembering this martyr from the 4th century, St. Lucia? Dr. James Busher will be our guest right after this. Issues, etc. regular guests, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, Dr. Stephen Hine, Dr. Angus Manouge, and Craig Parton will be speaking at the summer study sessions of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, July 8th through the 19th in Strasbourg, France. For more information, visit apologeticsacademy.eu. The International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, July 8th through the 19th, apologeticsacademy.eu.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
International human rights attorney and law professor Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the importance of Issues, Etc.
Before settling in England and France, I had my own Christian radio program for 10 years in California and 2 years in Washington State. I was also a regular for over a decade on national religious television. In a word, I have had a great deal of contact with evangelical programming, both good and bad, and my judgment in this area is probably worth something. In my opinion, Issues Etc. is one of the very few programs on Christian radio willing to discuss tough questions with solid theological answers. I consider it a great privilege to be able to appear on the program regularly, and I commend it to every serious listener.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Defending the faith, teaching the truth. Issues Etc.